This is horrible, this idea.
Ah, Jesus.
I know. Well, each time you and Paul both with Skype, it's like...
Well, does it make you log into Microsoft?
No. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why I don't get that privilege. Now, I almost feel, although it's an inconvenience, a terrible one at that, I feel like I've been excluded from the phone.
Aww, well, it's terrible, so it'll come to you eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Paul sits at home trying to work with Skype, and he's like...
It's a shitbox!
Hi, my name's Alan McNish, and this is Formula1Blog.com.
I'm David Hobbs, and this is Formula1Blog.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Matchett, and you're listening to Formula1Blog.com.
You're listening to the audio journal of F1 Opinion, Formula1Blog.com podcast.
Ralph, you cannot overtake Damon.
You heard that, didn't you?
Giancarlo, 3 laps to pit stop, 3 laps. Gotta push hard now.
Get that, Ralph? Did you hear me?
Michael is on. You're leading the race.
Ralph, acknowledge.
What up, Johnny? What up? Just about under braking at club.
Ralph, acknowledge.
Is Schumacher gonna start from here or from the middle or no start? Hi, hi.
Yeah.
Oh,
please keep calm.
I am so annoyed.
Fantastic! Absolutely incredible!
His behaviour coming into the garage and accusing me of trying to effing kill him is just unacceptable.
Very good race.
Boys and girls, your attention, please.
Hello, and thank you for joining me at Formula1Blog.com for podcast number 554. This is Todd.
No, Todd, not now.
A.K.A. Negative Cameron. Tonight, for your kind consideration, Carmen, Pippa, the FIA's Women's Commission. We're going to talk about that, as Paul would say, controversy. Also, Mercedes seems to feel it needs more stress in its team. That's interesting. And also, is there enough passing in F1? I don't know. We're going to talk about that. And finally, we may even get around to mentioning that old 3-engine rule. You know it, you love it. But before doing any of that nonsense, I have to introduce my guest tonight, which of course means... That's right. I have to go all the way to the right coast of America, nestled in our nation's capital, where she plies her skills as a master statistician, crunching numbers, crafting meaningful questions about meaningful topics on meaningful surveys. It's the lovely, it's the redoubtable
Grace!
Grace, how are you this evening, my dear?
I feel like you should add it, like, for at least the next 2 weeks to that statement. Who knows,
Grace?
The next 2 weeks, I will be, you know, crafting meaningful questions on meaningful surveys. And then who knows?
I guess that's always the risk you run, I guess.
Not really, but, yeah. I mean, I guess. Anyway.
A woman like you, you know, government can't do without you. The whole thing shut down.
Let's not get crazy. I'm just saying it's just, you know, political, ness. It's not really serving anything. It's just, you know, nobody likes being a pawn in a political game.
Boy. So. Doesn't Valtteri Bottas know it? Oh.
Yeah. I feel like Mark
outside
Webber.
Voice? Yeah. Doesn't Mark Webber know it? Yeah, exactly.
You're right.
Doesn't Daniel Kvyat know it?
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. Nobody wants that.
All right. Grace.
So.
Oh, Grace, we got a lot of news to cover this evening in Formula One, and it's the off season. There's not even racing going on, but good heavens, is there things to talk about? There certainly is things to, you know what, Grace, I gotta tell you, kind of a big day for me today.
It was indeed.
Yeah, kind of a big day. So my oldest daughter, thing number one, it was her 16th birthday. She did pass her driver's test.
Yeah.
Went down and did that. I was really excited for about 20 minutes until I found out that I can kiss those insurance premiums goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, although, be glad you didn't have a son. I wonder. I know
that's
that
even worse.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, right. So, yeah. So the insurance premiums.
And don't let her drive the McLaren. That will also insurance, right?
Oh, I guess I got to cancel my new McLaren Senna order. Yeah,
exactly.
That's not going to go well.
Man,
yes.
The brake ducts on that car, you could like scoop snow with it. I swear. Like, you could like hide small children in the brake ducts.
A small
of that
family
car.
Could live in that thing, man.
Like, you have to check for raccoons every morning. I'm like, I get it. It's a supercar, but seriously, when I can like live inside the brake duct, maybe it's a little too big.
It is a little big, you know. Yeah. So, you know, the taxes, you get that child tax credit. And then the insurance company says, yeah, we'll be taking that child.
Yeah, that's right.
Credit,
and
you know?
Can pass that over. Right?
Yeah, you can just hand that right over because, yes, you get a tax credit for having a kid. That's basically because we're going to penalize you for having a kid. I mean, the rates they're charging, have they ever, I guess they're suggesting that your child, because you had a child, it's now a menace to society now that your child can drive. Have they ever checked or driven behind a 79-year-old person? I'm just asking.
I mean, they are more likely statistically to have accidents
That's
just because they
true.
Are experienced. Right?
Now you
and
sound
I mean,
like an actuary, Grace.
I'm just saying that, you know, not your daughter personally, but just in general, because driving seat time is seat time, right? There's nothing that prepares you in your first 16 years of your life to drive, but driving. So
that's true. Although, you know, 79, you know, my mom's 79. She drives like she's towing a 1,000-pound anchor from her car, dragging it on the right-hand side gutter, you know?
I drive on the beltway to get to work. I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying that you are statistically more likely to be in an accident in your, like, first 5 years of driving
That's
than
true.
The rest of your life.
That's
so
That's very true. Just ask Paul Charsley.
There you go, because you just don't have experience, and seat time is seat time. There's nothing that really can prepare you for driving.
That's exactly right. Same thing for an F1 driver, right? It's all about seat time.
That's right. Seat time is seat time. Wait, you know, although maybe you should have bought her Gran Turismo before she got her driver's license. You know, go
you know,
practice.
It's funny you say that because I just bought it.
Excellent.
And her and I were playing it just the other night, except she's cool with it. It's fine. But it's my younger daughter thing, too, that absolutely loves it. I mean, she's down there.
Okay.
All right. Give me the Mercedes because it says Mercedes AMG. And those are that's her monogram. AMG.
Okay.
Right. So she loves it. And she's down there with the Mercedes just kicking the crap out of me because she happens to pick the Mercedes AMG race car. And I'm over there in the little Nissan or the Toyota Corolla. So.
So I will say, so we have it, and Flip and I might be a little competitive when we play,
no.
But they have like the little, right, you know, they have the little training sessions.
Yeah.
And when you get gold, it plays this music. So whenever that, you know, when you get silver or bronze, it plays no music for you. But, you know, when you're learning all the little components along the way, it plays this music. And it's just like, wherever you are in the house, we must stop and we must embrace the gold, you know, the gold disco ball music.
Right.
Because somebody just beat something, you know.
I
want that music when I like walk into a room. Like if I was president, instead of playing Hail to the Chief, I want that music when I walk into a room. You
there
know?
You go. That would be it's good.
Celebratory. So I'm a
I
fan
like
of that.
It. I like it. Oh, my. Well, Grace, let's talk about some Formula One news this evening.
Sure.
The first one that was met with what Paul would call controversy was the tweet by Carmen Jordan. Now, you remember Carmen Jordan was on board with Lotus or Renault, Lotus F1 team Renault, and they retained her when Renault. I think they retained her, if memory serves. I could be wrong on that, folks. I think they did retain her as sort of, I think maybe in a more marketing brand role. I don't think they, if memory serves correctly, I don't know they were saying she's the reserve driver. I think she was retained for another role. And I remember saying at the time, I thought, you know, now here's a woman that's got her feet wet. She's been in a couple open wheel races. She's been with this team. She's camera friendly and she would be a good ambassador for the team. for Renault as a whole, and really good with their big title sponsors and their corporate events and those kind of things, right? I assume. I don't know. I've never met her. I don't know if she, you know, is a salesperson at heart or what she's like. I have no idea. But she had a tweet that said that she was honored now to be appointed to the board of the FIA Women's Commission. Now, that is a group that facilitates the values and full participation of women in all aspects of motorsport. That, Grace, didn't settle real well with Pippa Mann, who is also a female race car driver. She was in Indy Lights, won a race in Indy Lights, and qualified for Indy 500. She's raced in that as well and been around the racing scene, certainly on the U.S. side, for quite a while. And she was not very keen on this whole idea, and she took to Twitter to voice her disappointment with the FIA and appointing a woman who advocated for a separate female-only F1 series and discussed at length the physical difference between men and women in an interview or two that Carmen did. Pippa was not happy about that at all, and she said she was very disappointed in that. Also, Lena Gade, you recall Lena was the race engineer for Audi at 24 Hours of Le Mans. She's a Le Mans winning engineer, race engineer for the team. She's very successful in motorsport with Audi Group and has done a fabulous job of crafting quite a career and a very, very sharp person. She herself is a member of the commission. And she said that she was going to speak to the FIA about it before really discussing it. But she did reiterate that she chose to compete on the main stage. And if you can't play, then – or if you can't, then play another game, was her point. I think a nod also to Carmen's comments about a separate series. I wrote a piece discussing the reaction of fans. The reason I did this is because certainly – look, I'll be frank with you. Carmen's been on the working end of a lot of jokes. And a lot of people point out her lackluster driving career. Some would argue that she doesn't have one, although she's been in some sanctioned races before in open wheel. But people were really harsh about this, and even to her on social media. And, you know, I got to reading that. Okay, look, you know, you may not agree with the appointment. Totally get that. If I had, and I'm not defending the appointment or her, I more or less come down on the side of the same as Lena Gade. But I did sort of feel kind of bad for her because there was a lot of harsh words and the personal attacks on Carmen. And I asked in this piece that I wrote, you know, I saw a lot of different criteria of why people felt she shouldn't be in this role. Certainly, Pippa was a nod to the separate female-only racing series. She didn't agree with that, and that sends a certain message. There's another group that was saying she hasn't accomplished anything in her career. She's a hack driver, blah, 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 blah. She shouldn't be representing women. So it made me wonder, of the people who disagree with this, I was kind of curious about what criteria are we measuring who the best woman to champion women in motorsports is? Is it her dodgy race career, her call for a separate series, or both, or her comments about the physical difference between men and women, whatever it was that she said? Grace, I was trying to give benefit of the doubt. I'm not trying to purposely start a hashtag actually kind of post with my piece, but I was trying to say, okay, what would the reasoning, what could justify a separate reason? And I was trying to give her benefit of the doubt. And I was thinking, well, here's a young woman who hasn't had a lot of seat time, as you mentioned at the intro of this podcast. And maybe she felt like, hey, look, you know, it's tough to get in Formula One. It's tough to get seat time. It's tough to consistently drive and get a ride on a week-in, week-out basis. And maybe a separate series would offer more running, more positions, more opportunities for women to work week-in and week-out in the racing world, and then possibly take those skills on to GP2, F1, whatever it might be. And I'm just trying to find some context here. I don't know that that's what she meant. Maybe she didn't mean that, but maybe that's what she personally needed as a woman. But then I juxtaposed that with someone I've always respected. And I thought as female drivers, I thought in contemporary current ones, I thought Simona DiSilvestro is the real thing. I think she's a terrific driver. She's won multiple races and she was fourth in a championship. She's driving Australian supercars now. She's put her head down. She's made her own opportunities. Obviously, she made different sacrifices to further her career than what Carmen has, and different choices. So, you know, I was trying to find that. I mean, there's no doubt that a person's accomplishment speaks volumes about their role in supporting others to do the same thing. And racing may actually be a sport where, as Brittany Force, who just won the NHRA drag racing championship, shows us that, you know, women can very much compete and win. In fact, there's been many terrific female drivers through the years, but racing, you and I've talked about this in the past, Grace, that, you know, there is an element about racing that's all about merit-based. It's a merit-based system and you have to earn your keep. And I tend to agree with Lena on this, that if you can't play, pick another game. But is the Women's Commission seeking to impact the equality of opportunity and not just finding women who belong in motorsport on merit? And if that's the case and that's the mission, then could Carmen help in that effort? I don't know. But I thought it would be interesting to talk to you as a female fan of the sport. You've seen women come and go in the motorsport since you've been into motorsports. You've seen Danica and Pippa and Simona and other women drive. And I was just kind of curious what your thought was.
So I think, first of all, I think if they're serious about this, if the FIA seriously wants to understand why there aren't more women in racing, in particular series, in Formula One, I don't think a race car driver is who you need on this commission. Because not anymore, like, so you can be able to separate conjoined twins, but that does not mean you have the same skill set required to run HUD, right?
Right, right.
So just because she's female and she's a race car driver doesn't mean that she can go and look at the systemic reasons why women aren't in racing. You really need somebody who is, you know, trained to do this, you know, as a sociologist, some, you know, somebody who understands and can look deep down below what one person's experience is in order to really understand, because racing starts just like it does in other sports. You have to look at the 4-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing if you say, oh, you know, women are different. 4-year-olds aren't that different. A boy 4-year-old and a girl 4-year-old are 4-year-olds. So why aren't you seeing more girls at 4 in karts? Like, you have to start early. I mean, it's no different than any other sport. You know, why don't you see, you know, in the WNBA here, all the women go to 2 schools. So then those are the schools that are always dominating women's college basketball. And then they all go to the same team in the WNBA and then they just dominate. Why is that? Well, if you really want to know, you have to start, where are those kids coming from? You can't look at the WNBA and go, well, I don't know, why isn't this happening? It starts sooner. It starts when they first start playing. So if you really want somebody, FIA, that's going to address what you see as a systemic issue in Formula One, a race car driver probably doesn't have that skill set any more than Ben Carson can both separate conjoined twins and run HUD. These are different skill sets. Maybe she can, but I just think that those aren't skill sets that probably are overlapping, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's step one.
It's kind of what I was alluding to. You just said it a lot better than I did. I thought, you know, look, if they're saying that we really need to find somebody who's very accomplished in motorsport to lead people in motorsport, then that's one criteria. But if you're looking for a woman who could dig into those issues and find out about the equality of opportunity or the programs available to young women who want to get into motorsport, I don't know if she's qualified for that or not. Maybe she is. Maybe she's right. Not. I don't know.
And I think another thing is, right, and I think this is what people are alluding to, is right? It's the Danica Patrick argument. Why was Danica Patrick so successful? Was it because she was on the cover of, or she was part of SI's swimsuit issue? I don't know. Sarah Fisher was never that popular, Pippa Mann was never that popular. Maybe if they just put on a swimsuit, right? So that is definitely one of the issues they're talking to here, is that because she's attractive, she's the eye candy. So we'll put her on the commission. Well, you know what? That's not really seriously solving that problem either. And so I would use as a counterexample. So, right, we all complained about how the race stewards, right, were Bernie's buddies, right? This was a way that Bernie said, hey, you voted for me, not voted for me, right? But you support this series. You're my friend. I'm going to make you a race steward, right? This is a way they give back to the auto clubs that vote for the FIA president. But we as fans are like, this is crap. Every week the rules are different. Nobody seems to know what's going on. It's arbitrated differently. So what did the FIA do? Did they fix this? No, they added a race car driver, right?
Right.
I don't know how that solves the problem. Yes, you probably have more experience because you're a race car driver as opposed to me running some auto club as having experience. But is Kimi Raikkonen as a race steward really going to be a lot more help? No, he probably doesn't care about the rules or know about the rules. I don't know. I'm just using him as an example, right?
Right.
But so did that really address the problem? No, and none of us know it. That was just their way of saying, oh, don't worry, you're Pretty Heads fans. We got this race car driver and he'll be able to help it. The rules change all the time. They change every year. Do you really think that that guest steward for that one weekend like slept on the rule book and learned everything there was to know so that he could talk about it spot on in that moment? No, nobody in that room still knows what the rules are. And everybody's still on the phone with Charlie Whiting. So why do the rules even matter? And we all know this. And we're being placated to as fans. And so I think that can very easily be what happens with a commission like this. They are really trying to address the issue. They're just trying to we'll just bring in these women who are race car drivers and we'll talk to them and we'll pretend like we're solving the problem. And then when you all stop talking about it, we won't really solve anything. If they're really seriously about trying to figure out how to get more women in racing, it's possible. But I don't know that this commission's actually trying to address that.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I understand what you're saying. You know, if you asked me, I would say, certainly Danica did the FHM or, SI and all that stuff. And I get all that. I mean, it depends on what, you're attracted to or not. I think she's a beautiful woman in her own right. Carmen.
Right, but being attractive is not an accomplishment, to quote Carrie Fisher,
it's not.
Right? Like, there's more to my life than how I look, just like there is for any other woman.
That's exactly right. And same thing for Carmen. She's a beautiful woman. But if you ask me Danica's success in that, I could go back. We could talk to Paul's brother, who was there in the nascent era of her career helping her. Paul's brother was, and she had dogged determination to succeed and was pounding out laps, went to Europe and was in those. I mean, nobody really even talks about those formative years that you're talking about. Here's a young girl, effectively, who is just absolutely very much like Lewis Hamilton, right?
Right.
I mean, think about how much of Lewis, and he alluded to this in a recent article this week, how much of Lewis's youth was sacrificed trying to become a Formula One driver, right?
Right.
And the same is for Danica, right? Same could be argued for Simona. Think about how much of Simona's life she sacrificed to be a race car driver, right? But she is, and she's a good one. And same for Lewis. I don't know. I guess on the flip side of it, at first when I read that, I thought, oh, really? Oh, that's a weird appointment, because I'm not sure that that's a good appointment. I'm kind of like with Lena on this thing, either you can play or pick a different role.
But I think that's different too, right? I mean, because saying so what Lena's speaking to would be only if it was a fair playing ground to start with.
Well, true. Right. She's coming from the context that it is.
Right. But, I'm just going to go out on a wild limb here, even though I've never been a race car driver and I have nothing to do with the industry. But I'm guessing it's probably not very female friendly in the same way that engineering or, coding or any of these other things that we talk about. I can't imagine that every time any of the women you've mentioned in here walks into a room and they're treated the same equal way that a guy is, because I don't think that's happening, right? They're always questioned. They're always second guessed. They always have to work harder than everybody else to prove themselves. it's not an even playing field. So I don't think that you – I understand what you're saying, and often that happens when the minority group, somebody's arrived, right? Like I could do it. I don't know why everybody else has such a problem with it. I mean, I see where that comes from, but I just don't think those kind of statements can be made because it's that main stage that we're competing on is not the same.
And yeah, and I think if you asked her, yeah, my assumption is, I don't know Lena. My assumption is if you asked her, she would probably corroborate that, and she had to work harder.
But I think the idea is that you shouldn't just have to work harder because you're a woman. You shouldn't just have to work harder because you're black. We should have a way, or brown, or any other minority group in any other field, right? You should be able to arrive on merit alone. Now, that I would argue again as a sociologist, I don't know that that's ever true, that you can ever really just be on merit alone, but we could get close, and we could at least eliminate at a young age what keeps girls out of racing. Is it, you know, because at that point, again, 4-year-olds are all the same size, they all have the same heads, they haven't developed in some way that somehow makes them different than everybody else, right? So why aren't 4-year-olds happening? Why, you know, is it that, you know, rich families that you have to be from in order to be in Formula One aren't, you know, putting forth their daughters, only putting forth their sons? Well, that's a different problem to solve than, you know, oh, the girls just, you know, get to 12 and then they don't continue, or they only get so far and then they, you know, they don't go on. Well, why is that happening?
Yeah, it's a good point. I guess as a father of 2 daughters, mm-hmm. I've been with them their entire life.
Right.
They've been around racing their entire lives. And when my daughters were, oh gosh, young, I remember when Kate, my oldest, was young. I mean, 3, 4 years old, they could pick out each driver on the grid. They knew mm-hmm. the Ferraris. They knew which helmet was Schumacher's, you know, which was Massa, you know, all those things. They've been around racing and cars their whole life, but they're just not into it. They don't want to be in racing. What happens if you find out that it's girls keeping girls out of it? Maybe a majority don't want to do it.
Right. But I think another thing too is that I think you could have 2 boys and they still may not be into it, because you're also not a Formula One driver.
You're not
really running in the crowd that provides that opportunity. I think that most of the drivers still come from relatively wealthy or well-supported families, right? This isn't like soccer that you can just, you know, or street hockey or something where you can just like, you know.
Now, wait a minute. Lewis came from a couch in Stevenage, Grace.
And he was well supported, and he's an outlier. I don't think that you can just say, well, here's the one guy that disproves what you're saying, right? I'm just saying that in general, if I met you before you had children and you said, do you think my kids, regardless of what sex they are, will be Formula One drivers? I would say probably not.
Right.
You're just not running in a circle where that's going to be an opportunity for them. I know. Me neither. But maybe, I just think that because there's more to it than just, I want to do this. And who at 4 is thinking of doing this, right? I mean, I think that's a component of it too, right?
So, not a lot. You know, and Paul could probably wax poetic because he's been out the driving school and seen stage moms and dads, right?
Who are
living this dream through their kids, right? And driving these kids really hard to do that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I felt compelled to at least write a piece and say, okay, hey, look, you know, I get it. I don't necessarily agree with the appointment either. So, I get it. But what's the criteria everyone's using this? Because I've seen, oh my gosh, she believes in physical difference between the sexes. She believes in a female-only sport, or she hasn't achieved, you know, jack squat in her racing career. I'm just curious, is it a combination of all three?
Where did her money come from? Wasn't she state-sponsored?
You know what? I don't recall. I don't know.
I can't remember either.
You know, I think her family is rich. I don't know about rich. That's
all right. But they have some. I don't know where her money, because I guess I could see that too, right? If this was a Maldonado, or you know, somebody who came from Russia who just was there because Russia had money, right? Or you know what I mean? Like, I think that's a different situation. I'm a state sponsored driver, then, you know, I'm sponsored, or I worked my way through it, or because then people will also, you didn't get here on merit. You got here because, you know, somebody else gave you a lot of
money. Because PDVSA gave you a lot of money.
Right.
To come from Venezuela, right.
Right. And so I'm not sure that could be a part of it too. But I think that, you know, as we were talking before the show started, I think there you can't start with the solution, right? Nothing is more annoying than when your upper management comes to you and says, you want A or B, and they've already decided B. Yeah. And so it doesn't really matter what your option is. So I think that you can't start with, we should only have a female F1 series, or we shouldn't have an F1 formula, you know, only female. We need to start from, what is the problem? And we're still again, if this is a real commission with a problem they're really trying to solve with.
Right.
My sarcasm shows I don't really believe that, but let's pretend that this is an actual commission and they're actually trying to solve something. To start with, you know, brainstorming. What is the problem? What are we trying to solve? What is our goal here? And maybe the outcome does become a female-only F1 series. I don't think that's a good path to go, because I don't think it will ever get away from that. You know, so I think once you establish a female-only Formula One series, the next step of integration, which you spoke to, I don't think will happen. I don't think that it will become like GP2 and all the women will compete and then some of those women will make it into Formula One. I don't think that's what will happen. They will be put aside in the secondary series that nobody takes seriously and nobody will watch it. And it, you know, and it'll be, oh, because it's women and nobody wants to watch it, and they'll never get anywhere. That would be why I wouldn't want to have a female only F1 series, because it'll never be integrated. They'll never succeed, because that just proves what any naysayer is thinking at this moment. You know, it just relegates them to the sideline.
So it'd be like the Tour de France women.
Right.
Tour de France.
But I think where Formula One is different, because the fundamental argument behind this is that there is no reason why women shouldn't be successful in Formula One. Unlike other sports, perhaps maybe you can make the argument that men and women physically aren't the same, or they can't compete at the same level. Although I don't know that that's true for as many sports as people would like to believe that's true either. But
I would say Tour de France is maybe one of them.
Right. So, or, you know, tennis, perhaps. I don't know. I'm sure there are other examples of places where men and women compete separately. Right. And, you know, maybe that's a historical farce that we continue to support, because there certainly is. This is why I would say that, you know, a race car driver isn't going to be the expert on this, perhaps, because, again, these are systemic, cultural, social values that we're talking about here. Right. This isn't just, oh, women just, you know, aren't given the same. They're smaller, so they need smaller equipment, and they're not given that equipment. That may well be part of it, but we're talking about systemic social values into why women don't get a shot in racing, and that's a deeper problem to solve than just, we'll put a female race car driver on here and we'll solve it. But a female race car driver, unless she's, you know, has more talent than one person really has, isn't going to be able to solve it. That doesn't mean you don't work with them. That doesn't mean you don't do focus groups with them. That doesn't mean you don't put them on the commission. But I can see why people question it. What experience does she have? She's really there for marketing. You know, is she there for eye candy? Who hasn't thought that? Really? We'll just put the pretty girl on the F1 commission, and then that'll make everything better. And that's the problem with F1, right? You go as a woman, and who are the women that you see? The grid girls.
Yeah.
And so I think it becomes very...
Well, no, I think that's changing. There's a lot of women working in the garages, working in engineering, working for the teams. You start to see quite a bit of that. Certainly, you know, you stroll down the pit lane to Williams, you got Claire Williams. You
know. I think that you're, again, pointing out some exceptions to how many men must be in each of those garages.
But numerous exceptions become a norm.
No, you're right. I'm just saying that if I'm doing a pit walk with, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen a woman except for the grid girl. So you're right. It is changing. There is progress. But I wouldn't say we're, you know, post whatever. There's still work to be done. I think that's my point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I got
don't
it.
Think that, you know, oh, that's it. We have, you know.
We got Carmen
a
done.
A handful of women. We're good. We don't need to work on this anymore, right? I don't think that's the case either. So,
right. I don't know. I felt a little bad. I mean, she's been the butt of some jokes, certainly. With
oh,
us.
For
she's
sure.
Been
people are mean to her, just like they're mean to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Danica Patrick.
Right. And I don't know her. She could be a really nice person. She could be a not so nice person. I don't know her. But you know, I was reading her time, you know, the timeline, looking at all the mentions of her and everything, you know, in social media, thinking, oh my gosh, this lady's taking a hammering on this deal, you know, and she just made this innocent tweet that she's excited to be on the commission and try to help women. And whew, you got race car drivers, engineers, everybody teeing off on you. And, you know, everybody sees people like Pippo or Lena or other, you know, people, then everybody, it's a pile on, right? And, you know, Will Buxton made a comment about it. And I'm not saying he's wrong, but I thought, you know, at some point, this kind of comes back to you said at the beginning, before we started recording. I mean, it comes down to common decency. I mean, whether I agree with the appointment or not, I don't feel compelled to tag her in comments and absolutely flay her and call her all kinds of vile things. I mean, you know, in my mind, it's just common decency. She didn't deserve that. Either you agree with it or you don't, and that's fine. But I thought that was a little over the top. But
yeah, and
again, it's the bravery of being out of range, right? I mean, it's,
right.
You know, if the person saying those things were sitting over a cup of coffee when talking with her, they may not say those things. But
and I think that right, like the social media Twitter storm aside, I mean, even if there is validity, you know, again, I think there's a validity to saying, well, do we really want a woman who advocated a female-only F1 series to be on the Women's Commission? We yeah. talked about that, right? Like, I think that's a valid yeah. point to make. I think there is a valid point to saying, you know, are you only, you know, promoting attractive women? Are you only promoting women who are willing to do XYZ, right? Because again, that's not necessarily what they should be trying to solve either, right? Well, if you're cute enough, gosh darn it, we'll put you in a race seat, right? Again, that's the issue that people have with Danica Patrick, no matter what race
yeah, she's
skill
more
she
than
has.
That. She's more than that. I mean,
but I'm saying that will always be a distraction. People always bring that up for the rest right. of her life, regardless of the fact that she may be a successful woman in her own right. She will always face that criticism. And that is something to be discussed as well.
Yeah, I think in closing, so we can move on, but I think you nailed it on the head. I mean, the point is what Pippa had commented at. Would does the commission appoint a woman who advocates for a separate series for women because they can't compete with men? Fair question. And I think it's worth asking that question because on its surface, that doesn't seem to be the mission of the commission, if you will. Sorry. For the rhymey, but that's
the mission for the commission.
The mission for the commission.
There you go. That's their tagline.
That's it. So, all right, let's move on, Grace. We'll talk about this all night, and people are like, "All right, I get it."
I don't know. I mean, we could have kept talking about any of the other things, or what we're drinking, or you know.
Yeah, I don't. You know, for me, it's important. It's an important topic. I think it's a topic that is starting to see change in motorsport. You know, and I just thought the reaction to this, or the visceral reaction to this, was it kind of caught me off guard a little bit. I expected people to say, "Wow, that's not a good choice," but I don't know that I thought the just the vile hatred and stuff would come out.
I don't know. I guess I don't find that as surprising.
Yeah. I shouldn't.
People say pretty hateful things when they.
Like I said, it's the bravery of being out of range on social media and stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, you say something and then you get all these, people attacking you. Like if you're a celebrity and you make a comment or something, in this case, she made a comment, "Hey, it's great to be here." And then all of a sudden you get attacked, mm-hmm. you know, by the mobocracy. And I shouldn't be surprised at that. Okay, let's talk FIA. You asked for miracles. I give you the FIA.
I like that we went from what was an interesting topic to the reelection of Jean Todt. Really? This is like, there's no amount of like segue between these two topics that is possible.
Other than this, there was a re-election of Jean Todt for the president, and the world over in the press and the media said.
Yeah, did anybody even run against him?
No, he was running unopposed. Jean will start his third and final term as president of the FIA and has offered his new focus, which is going to be mobility and all the innovation needed to advance that cause. Now, the goal is to help ensure safe, affordable, and clean systems of transport for all. Now, if a lot of times you read the press releases and he's like, wow, yeah, that's great. I like to thank the Academy and I'm really focused on mobility and that's what we're going to do. And everybody's, oh, people getting around. That's great. You know, well, if you parse that out a little bit, the term of the mission, anyway, there's a lot of scope behind this. It covers a lot of ground and it may be a noble charter, but I often get concerned when F1 is being looked at as a lab for new methods to help develop, quote, more inclusive, safe, and affordable transport, end quote. Go ahead, Grace.
No, I've now interrupted you, so I'm just going to go with it. I think it's interesting. I mean, it's right. This is not a new sort of like, what is the FIA's mission kind of conversation that we're about to have here. But I do think it's interesting that what does the FIA do now that the internal, let's say, the internal combustion engine, there's nothing else to, innovate there, right? Like we've gone as far as we can with the internal combustion engine. What should the FIA be doing now if there's nothing left to do there, right? Is it more Formula E, hybrid power, these kind of things? Like this is not a problem that they've faced in their existence, right? This is like a whole new, brave new world for them. Like what do we do now that everything we supported before with car safety, road safety, which was all around the internal combustion engine, now what do we do? It's totally different out there.
Yeah, totally agree. I would think that that's probably why their charter is, hey, we have to find new and innovative ways to address mobility. And I think certainly hybrid, alternative energies, electric, are all focuses of Jean Todt because he believes that. And the FIA, that's their mission. And I agree with that. This is where, call me old. Eventually someone usually sends me an email and calls me a Luddite. I don't believe it for a minute that we're done innovating internal combustion. I don't believe that for a second. I made the point the other day that when we talk about the regulation changes and some fans say this is the hybrid, this has been a bane on Formula One, we just need to go back to V8 or something and bring real racing back, they will get the counter that, well, what are you, a Luddite? Technology evolves. You got to move with the times and, go forward. And electric is the future. And you just need to, get over it. And that's what's happening. And it's silly to go back to the V8. This is silly to go back to 7 or 8 year old technology. I think the misnomer here is that we would say, let's don't do this hybrid that we spent a fortune on. Let's just go pull the covers off the old V8s we used in 2013 and use those. That's not what we're saying at all. Those that are advocating going back to a V8, if they next year decided that the sport was going to be powered by V8 engines, do you think the V8 that Mercedes would design for next year would be anything remotely close to the thing they were using in 2003 or the teams were using in 2000? No way. It would be much more efficient. The fuel usage would be reduced, the horsepower output, all the innovation that they gained from their internal combustion design from the hybrid, they'd apply to the V8, and it would be a piece of art. There's no doubt in my mind. This is Formula One, after all. So the efficiency ratings of these would be way up, and it would be an incredible engine, no doubt about it. It'd be less expensive to build. And that's what people are advocating. I think when we talk about road relevancy, if you design an internal combustion engine for next year's series that used 30% less fuel to generate the same amount of horsepower or output, that's immediately road relevant. In design circles, that's immediate road relevant. Trying to come up with a way to put an MGUH on a road car, that ain't so immediately road relevant. So, there's arguments from all sides of this, whether you agree with it or not. I'm just saying that if we developed a V8 for Formula One next year, it wouldn't be anything like the old V8s. It'd be quite a different beast. But your point...
and I don't know why people... people call you Luddites just because you still use a fax machine to send our paychecks doesn't.
Oh, wait a minute. My pager's going off. Oh, Paul's paging me. Yeah, I know. Fax machine. I do have a 3-in-1 printer, but it does not have faxing capabilities.
I mean, technically, our printer also, I think, has fax capabilities, but I don't have anything to plug it into, so it right. just prints.
Right. So if so, transport in major urban centers is certainly a mission that he talks about. Certainly, obviously, here in the States, not everyone lives in a major urban center. Not every industry works within the confines of a major urban center. And there's a lot of groundwork and a lot of innovation to be done. And I'm assuming the FI is looking at all that and makes that their charter. For me, this whole story is fine, whatever. But what's more interesting to me is, who are they going to start grooming over the next 3 years to be his successor? That's what I'm interested in. Who will that be? I mean, when Max was going to step down and they said, well, Jean Todt, everybody's like, oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah, Jean Todt, you know, the head of Ferrari, the guy's accomplished a lot in motorsport. You know, yeah, I could see that. Right?
I vote for Luca de Montezemolo. What's that guy doing?
Yeah, get Luca D.
Yeah, that would be an interesting FIA.
Oh, no, that's just polemics. Yes.
He'd have 3 years. We would be filling the off season if Luca D was the next FIA president.
That would be awesome.
My vote. I think that would be, we'll keep the Ferrari theme. I mean, I'm not a Ferrari fan, but this, I'm behind. I think this would be a great place to put former Ferrari employees for time and frame.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
I love it. Or Luca D. That would be awesome. I'm curious who it's going to be, though. I think that'll be interesting to see who takes the helm.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, this is only my second FIA president.
I think about it,
I don't
right?
really know.
Right?
And it just felt like, yeah, right?
You had Ballest, and then you went to Max Mosley and Jean Todt, right?
Right. I mean, there's only been three. So I don't know how that – there isn't a lot of precedence here for us to work with. I don't really know how this all really works. But
don't blame me. I voted Ari Vatanen. So.
That's true. We had him on the show. I mean,
we did have him. I interviewed Ari Vatanen. He was awesome. Yeah,
he was great. Maybe he should run again. I did vote for him. He was really good.
He was a super good guy. He called me from like the other side of the globe. The time zone was like, I don't know, a day off, you know, or half a day. And the guy had the grace to call me and apologize that he was late to the call. He couldn't have been nicer. Nice guy. I like Ari a lot.
Yeah, I think so. I vote for that. We should give him a call. We should get this going.
I agree. All right, another news, Grace. Mercedes, actually, it sounds like they want more stress in their team. Here's what he said.
I read these notes.
Isn't this weird? I know.
I think Mercedes, you know, so I joked, right, that Honda used to have the magic eight ball, right?
Yeah.
I think that it did go to Mercedes, but I think whatever is the, you were talking earlier about the evolution of, you know, right, the internal combustion engine and then it used V8s now, right? This has been many years since Honda had the Magic 8-Ball. What has it evolved to? It's not your grandma's Magic 8-Ball that's running Mercedes over there. Toto Wolff has got a whole new, you know, random comment generator going over there. This was just like, what did somebody, I don't. I was just perplexed by why this was even a thing, but I'll let you go. This is a great story.
Yeah, so Toto said,
get down.
He said, quote, I don't think we need to avoid a stressful situation. We need to, and Hattep Autosport for the quote. We need to acknowledge that.
Come on, say it right.
Oh, Hattep Autosport. He said, we need to acknowledge that if two teammates can fight for race wins and a championship, that this will be a rivalry. And we need to be conscious and acknowledge that is the case. We're not trying to build a new family here. Well, he is. He just had a baby. His wife does. Yeah.
This is a different story, right?
Yeah.
Congratulations. Very nice.
Yeah. He says, we're not trying to build a new family here. We want to be the most effective racing team. And an effective racing team needs stress. It needs tension. It needs disruption as much as it needs calmness and a positive attitude and mindset. But like everywhere in life, wait a minute, he's waxing poetic about life here. Wait a minute.
That's what I'm saying. What they have evolved beyond the Magic 8 Ball. Like that, whatever they're using.
No kidding.
Okay, amazing.
So here he's waxing. Hold on, let me get this. So he says, but like everywhere in life, when you want to have the mix of both, probably the recipe for success. There you go.
What is this comment?
Oh.
Get down.
I don't know. So what I think I it's hard for me, and I'm admitting right up front, I'm probably wrong, but it's hard for me to walk away from Toto saying that intra-team rivalry would be good. And you would have thought that doing away with that intra-team rivalry would make him happy with the Nico Lewis battle. But it's hard to walk away from this and not take this as a call to Valtteri to up his game in 2018. I'm sorry. That's just
I think you're right. I don't think I could see that as a shot across, you know, Bottas's, you know, nose, if you will. But I think this is also speaking to, so there was definitely some disagreement between Lewis and Nico, right? They were not buddies, if you will. But I also don't think it was like James Hunt level, Niki Lauda level of, you know, or, you know, Senna Prost or whatever, you know, like, I think that he's speaking to both what is the inner team side of it, which I agree with you. You probably want a little more calm, a little more, because ultimately it's the constructors that gets us paid. So we need you all to finish. We need you all to be friends.
Right.
But publicly, the world loves a good Senna Prost. So let's continue this as if Lewis and Nico hate each other. Well, yeah, but it was not. They always have this need to try to make it into this marketing epic level of, you know, oh my God, they're going to shiv each other. And, you know, like that suddenly this is, you know, Speed Racer and, you know, they all have like little things shooting out of their tires and stuff at each other. I don't think Lewis and Nico were ever that bad, but they want to create that mythos, right? Because that makes a good story and then people pay attention to them. Nobody wants to pay attention to, you know, oh, hey guys, we're friends. We hang out together. We play cards, you know, nobody, right. That's not a good story. Nobody wants that. So I think this is, could well, I see that, right? It could totally be a shot at Valtteri Bottas to, you know, right, get it together. But I could also see this as being like the you know, the media machine going, hey, pay attention to Mercedes. You know how nice Vitaly, you know, Bottas seems to be? That's a lie. He's really not that nice. Because then it generates some
interest. He's a mean Finn.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, that tension between Lewis and Nico, you know, that impacted the team, the drivers, the fans, everybody, you know, was, and it made for great drama, right, in the press. But it was a complete reversal in 2017, and perhaps some of that had to do with Valtteri getting the sea legs, in my opinion, and not quite being on the pace with Lewis, so therefore not a major threat to Lewis's title bid like Vettel was this last season. I don't know. In my mind, give it time. You know, I think once Valtteri gets his sea legs, he gets comfortable in that team, he starts laying down the last. We saw him win races. We saw him out-qualify Lewis. You know, he's there, thereabouts. I think once he gets his feet under him, starts doing well. Let me put it this way: if he starts out qualifying and winning races over Lewis, yeah, it's on.
I was gonna say you can't see my face, dear listeners, but it's some version of like child please. I think this is just them trying to create some marketing drama that I don't think exists, because I'm pretty sure Lewis, just like Fernando Alonso, has a Lewis Hamilton clause, and if Bottas really does start challenging him for real, somebody's going. And right. I'm pretty sure it's not Lewis Hamilton. So I don't think that he's necessarily the number two driver. Maybe he's like the 1C driver, but he is not the number one driver. And we're really going to see who's battling for it. As much as Mercedes tries to say, we don't have a number two. I just don't know that that's a successful way of being successful in Formula One, especially if you didn't have Lewis Hamilton, right? If you didn't have one of the best drivers on the field, then you really would have to have a one and a two. But you need to both finish. The constructors is what gets us paid. So
yeah,
don't take
true.
Each other out.
Well, I say give it time. Yeah, they all start all right. out as, hey, this is great.
Friends.
We're friends. And remember Vettel and Weber? I mean, Weber. Mark Weber. Have you ever met a nicer, more happy-to-know-you guy than Mark Weber? Mac Weber? No, you haven't, right? But it wasn't very long. And then, they, you know, they were, you know, he and Vettel
started
were going
beating
after
him.
Each other, right?
Yeah.
Hammer and tongs.
That's all what right. I'm saying is I think that Lewis will clean out that competition pretty quick.
Yeah. All right. So Pirelli released a statement stating that passing was way down in 2017, nearly 50% from last year and for the previous year in 2016. And while on the surface that may sound like an issue, Sebastian Vettel suggests we all need to calm down a bit. He said, what did he say? Oh, here it is. He said,
yes,
that's what he said. All right, moving on. No.
All right.
He said, quote, wishes for next year. They were asking him, you know, hey, what kind of wishes do you have for next year? He said, you know, I think wishes for next year is that everybody calms down. Some races are boring. So what? I don't see the problem in that. I don't think we need another record. Another record every race to have more overtaking and more overtaking. It's true that difficulty in overtaking sometimes, especially if you're behind and you're fast and you can't get past for those reasons, it annoys you. But then again, if you make the move, there's a massive reward inside the car, sometimes out of the car. What I want to say is that overtaking should be an achievement and not handed to you. Sometimes just relax and calm down, accept a boring race or a boring two races in a row, and then there will be another great race after that and another one. End quote. This comes back to my mind when we talk about the amount of passing, right? And this goes back to those surveys, Grace, that we've talked about ad nauseum, right? When fans were asked, they said, we want more passing in Formula One. Now, we've argued before that passing for the sake of passing is not really the goal in my mind.
No, I don't think it is. And anybody that listens to this podcast.
Right. So when you take NASCAR, there may be 400 passes, but that's a different series, right? They're all during the race. They're passing from different positions. Some are in and out of pit windows. You know, all that happens. But that's a 500-lap, you know, race, right? It's a four-hour race. It's a different beast. So you can't compare them. But
And as somebody who's been to Dover, you can have a lot of passing and it can still be really boring.
Yeah,
it is what's the passing that makes it interesting.
It's true. It's not. It's not at all. It's that one pass. They always say, well, the only pass that counts is the last one, right? Yeah, I get that. But this in my mind, this is why I hate DRS. But I think what fans were actually trying to say, I don't speak for all fans. Don't take it. I don't mean to be heavy-handed here. But I'm just saying I believe that a lot of fans were saying what they really wanted is an aerodynamic reduction that removes the dirty air that destroys a trailing car's ability to follow closely and pass or allow cars to run closer together and increase passing opportunities, not just in the DRS zone. That's what I think they meant. But what they got was DRS. And this now one, everybody just waits to the DRS. Well, everybody but Max Verstappen waits to the DRS zone, right? So,
right.
So in my mind, you say, well, you know, why is Max so prolific and exciting? It's because he doesn't wait for the DRS zone. He passes where the opportunities are, and sometimes he may chew his tires up getting there, but he's a tiger. He goes after it. And I don't expect prolific passing in F1. I don't know that I ever have expected that.
No, because again, I would make the argument that it is not like Formula. I'm just going to make up some numbers. It's not like in the early 2000s, you had 200 passes in Formula One, and now in 2017, you have three. You know what I mean? It's not like we had like this. There's this giant difference, right? In that sense, there's always some races, the Monaco, that have been kind of boring, but we watch, and then there's tracks that are really, you know, great and interesting and exciting. I think that there is definitely a quality issue related to the number of passes. But I think if somebody really thinks that we want in Formula One just more garbage passing, that's not what we want. We want, you know, like those great – when you're like, oh, you got to watch this. These great passes are, that we all could, rattle off, three or four of our favorites. That's what you want. I would have a race where there's no passing for like two great passes in a race. This is chess, not checkers. I think that if you're not speaking to the lowest common denominator kind of fandom, if you're really speaking to the anoraks, they're not saying that. That's not what they want. They want, good engineering. We want, right. We want to see it done with the cars, like you were saying. I don't think any of us just want push to pass so that people can get past each other. That's the last thing.
Yeah, no, it's not, because in my mind, the great thing about having cars that can run close together, that can pass, and having a car that's trailing that's slightly faster than one ahead of it is the art of defensive driving. And we're robbed of that. DRS kind of robs that, right? Yeah. I think of Vettel and Hamilton and Austin, right? I'm not suggesting Vettel could have kept Lewis behind him for the entire race. But what I am saying is that it was a moot point because the speed gained in the DRS zone by that Mercedes, it's just no chance, you know, sitting duck. So in my mind, that's what they were speaking to. And I agree with Sebastian, you know. A lot of people unhappy with Abu Dhabi. I would tell you that Abu Dhabi, in my mind, is more to do with the circuit layout.
I was going to say, but that's a track issue. That's not about the cars.
Yeah. Right.
Wait, I just read somewhere, maybe it was on Jalopnik. I don't remember now. But they were talking about how, right, the terrible Herman Tilke tracks. And that's one of the things they're looking to address was like, how do we make tracks not be crappy? It must have been
I thought they were a political website. Did they comment on cars and race? Oh.
His comments are funny.
I don't read anymore. I don't, you know, I have to, you know, I kind of go to certain websites for certain things.
Okay. Well, that aside, I'm pretty sure that's where I read. I'm just trying to be, you know, a good, I remember reading somewhere about a discussion that they were having about, hey, maybe the problem is some of these tracks suck and that Herman Tilke has designed a lot of crappy tracks. And that I remember how shocked and surprised we were when we all got to Austin. We're like, holy crap, this track doesn't suck, even though it was designed by Herman.
And I would say Jalopnik's absolutely correct.
So I'm just saying that I agree with you, having especially been at Abu Dhabi, that, yeah, it's the track, yo. You know, just like at Austin, there's the little Mickey Mouse back over itself section.
Right.
It's terrible, right? What is that? Turn 50? I don't remember.
Yeah, that complex, but, you know, over there. Yep.
Yeah, it was terrible. But you have the Senna S's and you have that, you know, turn one incline. And so you still have some really good spots, but then you have some really crappy spots. But I just think that, yeah, absolutely, you have to address the tracks. So what makes a good – you have to be holistic, right? What makes a good race? What are those components? These are – I feel like a broken record. This is a solvable problem, right? We can figure out why. And again, I'm not saying racing in the 70s, why racing in the 60s or the 70s was great and racing now sucks. I'm just saying, like, racing from like 2000, why is it should not be that drastically different as far as quality goes than it is now.
No, I think some of those circuits were, you know, that's what we've said this 1,000 times. So what makes Spa great is it's perfect in its imperfections, right?
They're designed for television, not for racing.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember I was talking to Bobby Epstein, who's the CEO of Circuit of the Americas, and a super nice guy. When I chatted with him, he was nice to me. And we were talking about the track. And I was asking him, I said, you know, Bobby, 2 or 3 years down the road from your first race, and as you look back at your track, he was asking me what I thought of the circuit. I said, well, it's a great circuit. I think the S's are great. And I said, you know, it's sitting anywhere from turn 2 to turn 10 or 11 is just fantastic to really see the cars doing their thing. I said, now the little Mickey Mouse section in there, I said that double apex, I realized that was trying to profile the Diabolic at Turkey, but you're not coming into that corner at those speeds. And he says, no, you're absolutely right. He goes, if I had my druthers, what I would rather have done is banked that turn. And I thought, well, that would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, that might be interesting. So anyway, but there you go. You know, banking the turn. What are you, insane? This is in Monza, right? But why not? You know, take a gamble. I don't know. Let's see. In closing, I'm not going to dwell on this because we're running long. I'm not going to dwell on it, but
this is what people want in the off season. They thought they were going to get that 30-minute podcast. I don't know. You have to commute to work and home from work.
That's true. You got to make it to and back from work. You know, those people with an hour commute one way, they're like, no, stretch it out, man.
Yes. What about the cheese? I don't know what I'm going to have for Christmas. Come on.
Wait a minute. What's Grace drinking tonight?
Help me out. All right, go ahead.
So the FIA's Jean Todt says that the three-engine rule is here to stay for 2018. He said, quote, it is something that – no, he didn't say it that way.
Again, you know, people radically point out, like, what kind of impression is Todd doing? No idea, but I enjoy it. It's a little different every time, and it never sounds like the person. So
I know. That's crazy. It's terrible. Horrible. It's horrible, this idea. It's something that was decided. Some people are still thinking, why don't we have one engine for the whole championship?
What?
It is not something that is new. It was decided years ago for 2018. We had some meetings with the teams and the way the regulations are made and the governance are made to decide now to go back to four engines or let's go back. We need to be in 100% agreement, and we don't get 100% agreement, so we are down to three engines. Okay, so I get it's a little choppy, and maybe it's lost in the, maybe it was translated, or maybe, you know, I don't know. It's not his native language. I don't know. But regardless, the challenge here is that it takes unanimous consent at this point from the teams to make any changes. And Red Bull were very keen to do away with the three-engine rule and thus the silly grid penalties, right? That's what Christian Horner wanted to do. They were outvoted. The team, other teams didn't agree, in particular Ferrari and I would imagine Mercedes. Now, they say, well, why would we do it? We're going to get 38 grid penalties, spot grid penalties. I mean, this is ridiculous, right? I said long before the 2017 season started, the biggest issue in 2017 is going to be the four-engine rule. Mark my word, you're going to be, by the end of the season, you're going to be really ticked off. And everyone was, right? Not that because I'm a soothsayer, but a four-engine rule, you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. Right. They opened up innovation, and they opened up. There was no tokens left. They could develop these engines. They were going to push the limit. You knew they were, and reliability was always going to be an issue. This doesn't take a Delphic Oracle to figure this out. I'm no genius here. You guys were probably all thinking this at home as well. But having said that, why would they? Well... If you're Ferrari or Mercedes, folks, and you've sussed your reliability issues, and for the most part they have, then the three-engine rule is as tactical to your race as some other strategies due to Renault or Honda's having more issues with reliability. So you can see where the teams may not all agree, right? So if I'm Mercedes and my engine is awesome, which it is, and my reliability is awesome, which it is, and Renault's isn't, which it isn't. We're going to go to three engine. We're going to put Renault's foot to the fire. And if they can't make a reliable engine, that's their problem, man. But then you eliminate Renault as a serious competitor, right? So you can see why teams are self-serving in a sense. I hate it because I don't like the three engine rule. I don't know what Jean Todt's talking about. Just do one engine for the whole season. I don't even know where we're going there. Think of the money they'd spend developing that thing.
It would be epic.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it'd be crazy. So the answer is stick with three engines. But they did change the grid penalty, folks. They've capped it at 15, which is basically a way of avoiding the press from revealing those 32 and 28 grid place penalties that make F1 look silly.
Just because Alonso's, you know, every race has to start three races ago, right?
Right. They hey, look, everyone knows, well, no, we want to stick with three engines. We just don't want the press telling the world that Alonso has 42 grid space. That's ridiculous. That's silly. That's ridiculous. You're right, it is. But we're not going to change the three engine rule. Let's just cap it at 15 so we can tell the world, well, he's got 15 plus grid space. Okay, whatever.
Yeah, right.
Like, what? Come on, man.
I just think, you know, right? Abu Dhabi. Yeah, you're just starting at Austin. That's how many points you're. It was a total joke, right?
Like, it was.
Yeah, not the best PR decision.
No, it wasn't. Anyway.
So, all right.
There you go, three inches. All right, let's do some awards. The first award of the podcast is Post of the Week.
Are you crazy?
All right, I'm going to phonetically butcher the name. It is spelled S-A-K-A-E. If you had to pronounce it, Sake?
Yeah, I'd go
Sake?
With that.
Sakai? Yeah. You know how we are as Americans, we butcher foreign names. And if it's got vowels in it, we just try each vowel sound until we get to the close to the vowel sound that it's supposed to be. It's like My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, This person commented on the Kerry story that I wrote regarding old fans versus new fans. And they said the bigger question is whether washed down version of the old F1 will be enough to keep legacy fans interested and still lure in new generation. I'm no expert on the subject, but I think it might be rather difficult, if not impossible, especially when increasingly I'm hearing from kids. I'm also a legacy fan. Don't waste my time. Just give me highlights of the race. And I want to see only something special. What happened is what they said. And I think this is an interesting point. So is that a case? We were talking about Chase Carey, Liberty Media, Formula One CEO, said he started his comment out saying, hey, look, these legacy fans and historic fans and longtime fans are real important to us, but we really need to get new generation fans too. And I argued, I was saying, well, okay, if everything before the butt is a lie, then how do you do that? And what I'm asking is, in the story, I'm not suggesting Chase is lying, far from it. I'm saying that he knows the legacy crowd is important. And I was making a case that the legacy crowd, whether they're Gen X or boomers, tend to be the generations with disposable income to support the series. But they're also, I think, one of Chase's best recruiters for the sport. And the reason I know that is because I, when I was a young boy, sat on a couch watching Formula One races with my dad, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of people do. My daughters did. They sat on the couch and watched Formula One races with me when they were young, mm-hmm. very young, right? And they liked the sport. But so I think it's difficult to do both. And I'm curious on this person's comment is saying, you know, look, one of the things is maybe it's an attention span thing. Maybe they don't want an hour and a half racing. They're happy with just looking at a highlight reel and the important things that happened. Do you feel like there's that element, Grace, not just Formula One, but maybe even stick and ball sports? Is there that part of the component to the radical decrease in NFL viewership or NBA or MLB? Do you think it is just different people not wanting to spend that amount of time watching an organized sport event? They just want the highlights?
No, I think I think that's the kind of thing that's, you know, that's what we say about every group of 20-year-olds. I mean, granted, we have, you know, the ability to watch highlights, right, at a moment's notice, right? We have, you know, we have the NBA package. So at any moment, if I missed a game, I can go watch the, you know, the 30-minute, you know, compressed version of the game, which is good if I missed a game, but it's still not how I prefer to watch a game, right? But there's, what, 80 games a season, and people require me to leave the house. So at some point, having compressed games is helpful, and then I can watch other games. So I think there's definitely space for that, but I don't think, you know, if that was the case, I mean, I don't watch a lot of, you know, endurance racing or, you know, sports cars, but are these same kind of sentiments being said there, which are much longer races, right? By like
24 hours,
right?
Right. 22 hours. Right.
You know, right. I mean, and I've never tried to sit there and watch all 24 hours, but, you know, definitely through doing this podcast and you and Paul being very big into that kind of racing, I've watched more sports cars than I ever did before. I think there's something there to
that's great
enjoy, right? Yeah, and is. So
let me take a stab at making an idiot of myself.
Oh, these are my favorite podcasts.
I know, these are fun, aren't they? And this happens quite frequently, by the way. I'm a Gen X. I don't speak for Gen Y or Gen Z, my daughter's generation. But let me argue this. I understand this person's point. I don't know that they aren't willing to watch it. They just want a highlights package. What I would say is what they definitely would like is the ability to consume the product where and when they want to. They'll watch the whole race.
But
they don't want to. They want to do it at the time that's most convenient in their life. You know,
well, we've talked about that, right? Because one of the hardest things. So first of all, I think, and you made this point and I was getting there eventually, but that it's about marketing, right? If somebody's like, why do I have to watch this whole thing? Right. Then you're not marketing very well, because a half an hour race would not be worth watching either. So, mm-hmm. right. There's a reason why it's this long, and you could explain that to somebody, but I do think that's true. I think one of the hardest things is it used to be that I would get up at 7 a.m. and watch the race, and then you can watch it with live timing and scoring. It's so hard to watch a race without live timing and scoring, but unless you watch it live, you don't have live timing and scoring.
That's
so then you're then you're reliant on whoever broadcast you're watching to go, oh, and here's what the gaps are, and here's where this person is. I'm like, if I just had live timing and scoring, that just that one screen makes it much easier. So I think I agree with you, because it needs to be a way that I can watch that race when I want, how I want it. If I could just sync live timing and scoring with my race, that would be amazing.
That's
would be
the key.
Helpful.
And I've argued this for years before Liberty even bought F1. I said, look, folks, you need to stream the sports, sell it as a package, as an option for fans. But in doing so, it's got to be the complete race package, meaning that I missed the race. I didn't watch it at 6 a.m., but I'm watching it Sunday evening. And I want to fire it up on my TV, but I also want the timing and scoring in synced so I can follow race strategy and tactics. Because if you can only get timing and scoring live, then that's removing such a huge chunk of the race. So
yeah, I agree with that.
It's got to be synced. It's got to be a package. I get the video, the commentary, and the live timing and scoring all in sync when I want to watch it, where I want to watch it. And if I had to argue what millennials, or I don't know, maybe that's they don't like that term, maybe Gen Y or Gen Z, is if I had to argue what they're wanting, I would think they'd say, no, we like F1. We want to watch F1. But to be honest with you, all the cord cutting and everything that's going on and the evolution of how we watch TV and content, I'd like to be able to watch it whenever I wanted to, and I'd like to have timing and scoring with it, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's all they're saying. You know, listen to me, defending Gen Y, you know?
I know, right? Those millennials, those entitled millennials, gosh.
Well, you wonder how Grace and I are so in touch. How do Grace and I have our finger on the pulse of what the millennials want? Huxley and Atticus.
That's right. Yep. I got those glitter beard kits for him for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's going to be awesome, man. They're going to love that.
I can't wait.
It's going to add to that whole lumber sexual look they got
going. I was
going
to say in their Lewis Hamilton mismatched fabric outfits. But
that's so perfect.
I mean, long story short, I think absolutely. I guess I was getting there, right? Like, and this happens with, like, I remember when they first started sending you text messages of who won the race. Mm-hmm. And so it was great because, again, sometimes people require me to be places on Sunday and I can't watch the race. And then they used to just send you the text message and it would just be like, here's, you know, 1 and 2. You have to come to our website to see the rest of it. If I could see the rest of it, I wouldn't need your text message. Right. So I'd have to text you like, well, who were the top 5? Because the FIA or, you know, the Formula One didn't feel like they needed to share that information with me.
Ruining the podium isn't a big deal, but boy, we wouldn't want to betray 4th through 10th.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I hate it when they would be like, you want more information, go to our website. I can't go to your website or I would be there now watching the race.
And I'm not advocating everything needs to be held back. I mean, look, life happens in real time.
Yeah, right.
And years ago, when I would post a result and everyone's, spoiler alert, oh, thanks for ruining it. Well, get off Facebook. Look, if the first thing you do is jump on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and start trolling Twitter and Facebook, looking around, you're going to see the results because life happens in live timing, you know?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous to think that nobody's going to post the results as it happens and get upset that it was a spoiler. You know, those days are over.
Actually, the races that are in my time zone, I find more disruptive to my day, right? Because
they are
1 o'clock in the middle of the day. And well, now people really want to do things. Whereas
I know.
Nobody really wants to do anything at 7 a.m. So
on a Sunday morning. Yeah. Come 11 or 1, the rest of everybody's awake, you know?
Yeah. Right. So,
All right.
So I agree. I think that they need to, and we complain about Bernie with this, right? Like, get with the game here, man.
Yeah. Come on, man. All right, the next award is Grace's favorite. It is the Lewis Hamilton Fashion Award.
Lewis Hamilton, there's no stopping him. Lewis Hamilton, there's no stopping him.
A prodigious talent.
All right, Grace, you know they have the FIA Gala. Is it Gala or Gala, Grace?
I think it's gala, but what do I know?
That's what I say. I say gala, but there you go. Black
maybe the
tie
French,
affair.
Maybe the French call it a gala. Who knows?
Who knows? I bet Charlie does.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he also calls it Monaco.
Monaco. That's what he says. Controversy. Monaco. That's exactly how he says it, too.
I knew it.
The British. Gotta love them. Yeah. Okay, so big black tie event at the FIA Gala Fashion Award goes to
Lewis Hamilton, who chose not to wear a black tie or a tuxedo or anything that was remotely in the same closet as one might put a tuxedo.
That's right. That's right. Sam Bird. Bird, not happy about it, tweeted, said, hey, love you, love your driving skill, but a black tie event, put on a black tie.
Well, you know, what kind of shoes was he wearing? Is he wearing tennis shoes or was he wearing, I didn't look. Can you tell from that picture?
Is it Timberlands? What's he got on? I can't tell.
I gotta find that picture. I was too busy looking through all the other pictures of the dapper individuals winning awards that, here we go.
Yeah, I'll put a picture of all the award winners. They're all standing on stage and all the men are in black and in tuxes, black tie.
Yeah.
The women wearing very shiny, beautiful dresses and Lewis wearing very shiny, beautiful outfit with leather pants.
I feel like he's wearing tennis shoes. I don't know how I feel about that.
He didn't come to get the trophy. He is the trophy.
Well, I was the shoe wearer. I'm not so sure. But, you know, it's a good thing they didn't put him next to the lady who was standing next to Chase Carey, because I think there would have been some clashing in that outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Togetherness there.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been good. They probably should have coordinated their outfits before they went.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Her dress is awesome, though. Yeah, there's some great stuff here. But, yeah, Lewis, I mean, you could tuck in a shirt. I mean, right? come on, man.
You say, where's that line? It's a historic event. They're honoring you. Their dress code's black tie. You show some respect and show them black tie. I get that. On the flip side, you know, to be fair, Lewis loves fashion. He's intimated that he would like to get into fashion when he gets out of Formula One. It's his thing now. It's what he loves. It's his brand. It's his look. He's his own guy. And he says, you know, I get it. It's black tie. But, you know, I'm Lewis. And this is what I wear. And that's what I'm going to wear. You know, so
at least it's all from one fabric. I guess we can.
Yeah, you didn't have the multi-plaid jacket on, which would have been cool. But I don't think I've ever seen him wear the same thing twice. Except his race suit. But
not with the money.
No. Well, true. Yeah. Not with his money.
I mean, he has sponsorships. I'm sure they also help him not, you know, wear the same outfit twice.
At this
point,
can you imagine his walk-in closets?
Well, I don't know how much of it he gets to keep, right? I mean, that's what, like, celebrities don't necessarily get to – they don't keep what they wore on the red carpet. Or they don't necessarily – I don't know, keep all that stuff. I did want
Here's
to note
the pants those. Lewis had. He was out carousing last night. Here's his pants. Somebody wash these.
Eek. I know. We're getting Charles Lee for Christmas now. That's check.
We should get him that gold sequin jacket Lewis has. Can you imagine Paul wearing that? That'd be awesome.
Man, I wonder if you can pop the collar on it. That would be great.
Oh, that'd be Anthony Michael Hall like there.
Yes. So I have often stated that, you know, like if you're at a race and you're like doing the pit walk, you know, walking down the pit lane or something like that, and you don't know who the driver is, just look for the shortest person surrounded by a bunch of taller people. And that's how you know which one the driver is. Unless it's Jean Todt.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he was a short guy, but if you went just by that rule, you'd think he was a driver.
Yeah, I know.
He's a short guy.
Lewis is shorter than I thought he would be. And I've seen him in the paddock. I've stood, you know, I've walked by him and I don't know. For some reason, he just is shorter in those pictures than I remember him. Anyway,
it's all relative. Just like how basketball players, you're like, oh, look at that short guy. Yeah, he's still like 800 times taller than me, but all the other guys are way taller than that.
Right, so point guard's a little guy, and you go down and walk next to him. He's 6'7".
Right. Like, it's only because the center is like 9 feet tall.
Exactly. All right, the final award is the Matt Bishop Bravado Award. All right, Grace, I'm giving it to one Franz Tost.
Oh, very nice.
Of Toro Rosso. He's speaking about Daniel Gaviria. He says, quote, sometimes he was too aggressive at the beginning of the race. The first corner was his weak point. He wanted too much in the first 100 meters. Success by any means. That puts you under pressure, unnecessary pressure, and that never works, end quote.
All right.
You think?
I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, well, they reached out to Sebastian for his comment. He said,
I'm out.
That's it. No more radio.
Oh, yes. Grace, I've got to get that in for you.
No more radio. The rest of the race.
That's it. That's always it's a favorite.
Oh, man. Anyway, yeah, I found that interesting. I found that Grace is like, okay, well, it's yep. more than that first 100 meters, but that's cool. That's cool.
That's
we'll go
right.
with that. He did go on to say that he absolutely believes that Danny's got sheer pace and belongs in Formula One. He's convinced of that. And actually, to be fair, I would agree with Franz that I think Daniel Kvyat put a lot of pressure on himself, and he tried to. I think he was just trying to overachieve, and overdrove his car, overdrove the first corner, as Franz says, or 100 meters. I would agree with that, but I also kind of think, okay, but that's something that you kind of got to get over.
You know,
you got to be coached to. You're not going to win the race in the first 100 meters. And it just seemed like he had a real hard time getting his head around that. But
as they say in basketball, you got to play all four quarters.
That's it, man.
Right?
That's
you can't blow all your, all your energy in the first quarter.
That's exactly it. All right, Grace, I got to wrap it up. That
all
does
right.
it for the podcast. Be sure to stop by the website, formula1blog.com, the word formula and numeral 1blog.com. Share your opinion. Just do it decorum and civility. And I'm serious. I feel like I keep having to have these conversations. Inevitably, there's people that always turn it into some personal attack. Stop it. It's really starting to tick me off. It's as easy. Just disagree. Share your opinion and move on. That's how we do it. You can go to the forum, do the same thing, but start your own topics, your own conversation. If you like the podcast, go over to iTunes, give us a good rating. Also, huge thank you to those who signed up this week to support us on Patreon. And we couldn't be more grateful for your support. Some folks said, hey, Patreon changed their payment terms. And so they came over and did a monthly on our PayPal account. Either way is fine, folks. Whatever is best for you. But huge thanks for those supporting us on Patreon, as always. And you can go on Monday night on Twitter, hashtag F1 chat, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard. And you can hang out with Tom, who does a fabulous job. He's a wonderful young man and does a great job of heading up that F1 chat on Twitter for us on Mondays. And you can do that as well. And then we'll be back next week to do it all over again. So I guess until that time, this is Todd, a.k.a. Negative Camber, saying so long, Grace.
All right, see you next week.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Love racing.
Lewis takes the cake.
Oh, excellent.
There's no stopping Lewis.
There is no stopping him.
He didn't come to get the trophy. He was the trophy.
Oh, boy.